You are listening to Wicked Psychotherapists, a podcast where two psychotherapists show you that taking care of and learning about mental health doesn't have to be wicked hard.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya Dos Santos.
And I'm Erin Gray.
And this is Wicked Psychotherapists, a podcast brought to you by two therapists who love to talk about and bring awareness to mental health topics in pop culture.
We hope to infuse a little bit of our experience and personalities to help broaden your noggin.
I wanted to start out with, and tell me how you feel about this, with addressing the question about income with therapists. And have you heard anything? Was there other things that you commonly hear, things that just maybe rub you the wrong way? Or what have you heard about income with therapists, like what they make?
I think people assume that a lot of therapists are almost on par with some of the other healthcare professionals, where it's a fair wage and great income compared to my past life. Like, it's a lot better.
Yeah, it is. I would have to say that I've definitely heard that when people, there's some myth out there that therapists like make bank. And I'm not saying you can't, or if you have a private practice that's thriving. But there are a lot of considerations, how much schooling it takes to become a therapist, if you take out loans or if you just paid for it along the way. It's a lot of education and continuing education.
Yeah.
Because we have to still get continuing CE credits, as we call them, all the time, that usually are not paid for. We pretty much always have to pay for them. Pricey.
Where it's different than a lot of fields where their job might pay for it or they get reimbursed. Both you and I are in private practice. We're responsible for all of our continuing ed and our setup and our supplies and everything else we need to run our practice. You take that into account too of what you make. Because we are private practice, you still have to take out for taxes and for this and that. And so if you see that number, whatever the hourly amount is, it's going to be lower.
Yeah, we have to pay our own quarterly taxes. So the money that we get, you automatically have to put aside like 30% of that. There's also other things that we have to have, like malpractice insurance, CE credits, anything that you need for, if it's a telehealth therapy business, maybe not too much overhead in terms of having to buy furniture and things like that. If you have an in-person office, there's furniture and other things that you would have for clients and rent from that space. There's also the fact that you have to really struggle to get a decent, I think, rate through the insurance company. And it's set very randomly. It's not something that's very transparent. They tell you not to talk about it with other therapists, what your rate is. It's a messed up system. And a lot of times insurance companies can do what they call clawbacks, which is if they decide to audit you and they found your notes to be, for any reason, up to a certain amount of years back, depending on each insurance company. If they found them to be not appropriate for what they wanted, they can take that money back. That's not something that I think is a constant threat, but it's still the fact that something that you made a year ago, I think now they're doing like payment plans or they won't pay you until you have paid them back. But that's pretty frightening. And when it comes down to it, a lot of times in our code of ethics, we're told all throughout school to make therapy available to people to like say you can offer a sliding scale, you cannot. But in our code of ethics, it is something to be able to help out people, right? To be able to offer them this service that can be a necessity. So there's that guilt already instilled in there for making money. And I've also heard from other people, how do you live with yourself charging this rate of people need this, as if I think sometimes it's forgotten that this is how we're making our living and we're barely breaking even a lot of times.
Right. Because if you do take in account of student loans, insurance, taxes, and other overhead, it's just like with any job, fees, and there's different things that we're responsible for. But yeah, it is an uncomfortable subject. It's something as a private practice person, we have to talk about with our clients where it's, okay, here's my set rate if you're paying out of pocket, and here's the copay if you're using insurance. So finances have to be spoken about.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like you said, that's not what we take home. There's taxes, there's other considerations that we have, there's other things that we pay for, and we don't have hourly guaranteed clients. People can cancel. We don't necessarily have enough clients at certain points. We don't have people that maybe can come to therapy for a few weeks, and we have to constantly fill in those gaps if you are in private practice, right? So it's not necessarily like this is 8 hours a day of getting this rate. It's not that. I'm not saying some therapists don't have that, because some therapists can't set that up, but it is a lot of work maintaining a caseload and a consistent caseload. Mm-hmm. A lot of luck, I think, sometimes with people getting sick, cancellations, and that kind of depends on your cancellation policy and all that. But usually it's 24 hours. Some people say 48 hours. And sometimes people give a freebie that first time and are like, okay, we're all human.
Yeah. I always say it's probably not the best business practice, but I tend to do more of the freebies just because I always worry, like, what happens if I get sick and then I have to cancel? I tend to, it's probably frowned upon by a lot of people, but I tend to do the, as long as you let me know, no, I'm okay.
Yeah.
If you're not, if you're consistently a no-show, then I have it in my consent forms that I will charge a fee. So I do it by case basis. If they do let me know, if they call and let me know if they're sick or something happens, but if they don't show or they don't call, I will probably do the fee, like the no-show fee. But otherwise, as long as I get noticed, because I know things happen. People get sick. I get sick, and I've had to cancel before as well.
And that, even the way you said that, is it, and it's totally reasonable. I think built in with that is your, this is a service, but we also, within the service, we're providers that have a high level of empathy. And so I think we can see that, and we can know if the tables were turned and we're like, if I was sick, maybe I might have to cancel a little bit sooner or a little bit later. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't know. And sometimes that influences our business style. We can't be as cut and dry, or some people are. Mm-hmm. I would say I'm probably fairly similar in terms of if people can't show up, because the clients that I do have, they do let me know. They usually let me know ahead of time if they're able to, but it's pretty reasonable things. But yeah, and that's a hindrance to income as well. Just that very fact of the nature of what it is we're doing, and the fact that we do understand that. And
yeah.
It's something that, you know, that, and it's not like we don't have any like government assistance that's, oh, okay. Oh, you had a missed client. Okay. So we'll give you some money. It's just, we just don't make money. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes people have said in other jobs that I work in, they'll be like, oh, you get paid anyway if I don't show up. And in some instances, sure. In those kind of community mental health jobs where you're getting paid a salary, but then you have productivity. So you have to make up for that client anyways. And then other instances, it's no. If you work in like a group practice or private practice, no, you just don't get paid. So there's no kind of supplementation. There's no government there's no like organization that's, oh, we'll pay you for that time.
Like you're not usually eligible when you're a sole provider for those PPP loans and stuff like that, because they're not going to bail you out if you're just not able to see the clients.
But even then, it's a loan.
Yeah.
It's a loan.
It's not free money.
It's not like any assistance. Yeah. And I don't know that people really get that, which kind of brings me into the next topic, which I think we were talking about before, which is the amount of accessibility that we have as a clinician or a provider.
Okay.
Being on call, being available to people. So what have you encountered with that in terms of people maybe texting you, messaging you, emailing you after hours, or how has that been for you?
Yeah, so I think I'm probably a little unconventional in some instances, but whenever I get a new client, I always tell them, like, here's my cell phone, here's my email. You can call or text or email me in between, which is fine, because something could happen, or they could be like, hey, I just thought of this, or want to make sure we have an appointment on Wednesday or whatever. Usually most people are pretty good about not over communicating in between session. I have had in the past, like, where some people will use the texting as a therapy session. So for instance, we have a session on a Monday. They'll text me Monday through Monday, little things every day, or recordings, or which that's different than just sending a meme or just sending, hey, do we have an appointment next week? That almost steps into, are they asking for therapy? Or are they trying to use the resources that I'm giving them in other manners? So I'll usually try to redirect someone if they are doing that, where I'll be like, hey, do you need another session sooner? Or just try to let them know. I don't mind you reaching out if it's an emergency or if you need something, but I can't text all the time every day to them Also, I might be in session with other clients.
Right.
So obviously I can't text while I'm with in session. And my hours, I start seeing clients. Some days I start seeing clients at 8 a.m. and then I usually end about 3. So then I still have to do notes. And I have other, so I don't really have a lot of, I don't want to say I don't have time, but it's not, if every single client did that, it would be very difficult to do a full level of care for everybody if everybody was texting.
Yeah, it's boundaries. I've come to realize, I know we were taught in school, you shouldn't have to give out your personal information, but sometimes in private practice, you have to, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what you have. I have one of those like virtual phone numbers that I really explained to them, and I told them from the beginning that this is a number that it does have texting capability, but I say I prefer like an email address, which mm-hmm. is a separate email address, and that it's not to be used for emergencies. If you have an emergency, mm-hmm. these are the numbers that you call, because I don't know if I'm going to be available. Mm-hmm. Right? This is just for rescheduling. This is just for if you have a question or a clarification, and that's it. And that's how I've evolved into that. Like, I definitely have had points where it's felt like, what's the line here?
Yeah.
And you have to almost draw those boundaries. So when I started my private practice, I knew that I'm a very nervous, anxious person. I knew that I had to have those boundaries because mm-hmm. we're people and we have to shut this off after mm-hmm. a certain point. And your clients, you tell them this, it's something yeah. that they'll stick to. But I didn't know these people when I first got
right.
them. And so I was very much, okay, this is how it's going to be. This is for the emergency numbers. Mm-hmm. I have not had much other than through another job that I work at. I haven't had any kind of anything that's in this recently that has happened in terms of that. But in the past, yeah, there have been people that, you know, kind of young adults mm-hmm. would talk in terms of they would want to send memes and things like that. And you'd have to just be like, oh, that's cool. Like, we can talk about it maybe at our mm-hmm. appointment. Like you said, redirect. The feeling is that you don't want to have somebody have an emergency and you didn't check that. And you have to make it clear that I'm not on call 24/7. I'm not a crisis clinician.
One thing I was just thinking when you're saying that, I also try to let all my clients know, I don't sleep with my phone. I know a lot of people right. do, but I don't. And I make sure they know that.
Right.
I am very purposeful that I put my phone in my kitchen and I charge it in my kitchen. And I make sure I usually tell most of my clients that, like, if I go to bed at 8 or whatever, because I wake up at 5, I'm not 90, but I do. I'm a 5 a.m. I work out. I'm just crazy like that. I like to wake up at 5. But I always tell them, like, I go to bed early, but I charge my phone. So I'm not going to, it's not on my bedside. So if they're texting me or if there is an emergency, I'm not going to hear it. So yeah, same thing. I give right. them like the different, like, here's the different hotlines. Like, you can call, but for the emergency, for the after hours things.
Yeah, because that's definitely important to know, because it's also important to know, and I think to model that self-care, right? That we also have times when we need to shut off. We're not available. It's the way that things are advertised in mental health of reach out if you need some help. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean if you're just feeling sad for a little bit that we can.
Yeah.
Just should have somebody available constantly. And I'm not talking about like depression. I'm talking about if there's kind of difficulty with that, that may have to be something that waits until the session, right? I guess it's the same with other professions. How would you feel if people were contacting you 24/7? Yeah. You know, like, we're not subhuman, you know, we are people. Yeah. We need that time when it's not fair.
One thing I found that helps when I've noticed somebody is reaching out a lot, as an emergency, we'll do like a little check-in too, like at the next session, if it's not a crisis, and let them know, hey, you know what, utilize the notes on your phone or something like that. So you can almost use that as texting me. And then when we have session, we could read it. You could read it to me. And that seems to work a lot for people, because then they're still typing it or they're still getting it out, but they're not feeling like they have to text their therapist everything. It's still there. So they let it out of their brain, but they didn't have to send it directly to their therapist.
Yeah. And that's a great point. Maybe it is just that some people are saying, I have to get this out and my therapist would like to know this. And yeah, there's certainly, I think that's a great tool to say, hey, write this down or have this on the notes section so we can talk about it next time, because it sounds like you're worried about forgetting it. And this is maybe something that you're feeling a lot, but you can't access it during our session. So maybe you're really wanting to let me know that. And that's totally, yeah, that's a good redirectable skill. And that definitely sounds like a really great idea. Yeah. And I think that it's very different for different places. There's some places that are built for crisis, like it literally is a crisis center. That's obviously different. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just I guess that's a misconception that some people are not aware of. I haven't experienced it too much in my private practice because I was very, like I said, I was very, because of past experiences, I was very, okay, I have to set this up and structure this.
Very, I mean, like,
but that's from learning from.
Yeah. And that's like, really good though, because you have the boundaries, but you also have the experience of working in facilities where you probably learned, if I don't set boundaries, this is not going to be great.
Yeah, I definitely like community mental health centers and things where it's, you get the whole gamut of mental health disorders and you're working on productivity. So you're working with numerous people. So you have to really learn how to be like, okay, this is what I can contain in this work time. And then the rest of this, I have to feel good about it being there and to know that they have the resources for that.
Right.
Because otherwise it just, I had it happen. I burned out a couple of times. It was really bad.
Yeah.
And yeah.
What about,
it's frustrating.
I want to just ask you a question. So what do you do for self-care as a therapist?
What I try to do is reduce the amount of social media that I'm on. That's my first thing that I always go to. Mm-hmm. I also love yoga. I think that it's something that it really changes my physical and mental state. And I like the camaraderie of other people being there and just not having to worry about other people. Instead, it's just, I can focus on myself and just feel at peace. And I also like to, I love going out in nature and just being outside with my dog because she's just like a little kid. She likes to play in there and she enjoys it. And it's just, it just feels good. It just feels rejuvenating for that. But yeah, it's self-care is very important. What about you?
My Peloton is like, when I'm doing it, it's because it's very addictive and it helps me out a lot. And then a garden, Paige, my dog, is also my, I was going to say my soulmate. Yes, she's my soulmate, but she's also she's my buddy, my partner. And then we just installed, I sound like such a dork, but we end up getting one of those basketball hoops, like the in-ground ones. So we just installed that because we used to have the cheapy one that you fill with water or sand. So I've been playing a little b-ball every
Nice. That's really
It's so fun because I had the other one, but it'd always fall. And I was like, I am buying a new in-ground basketball thing. And I just got one that was on sale, super sale. So it took my husband and three of his coworkers to put it up. But I'm living every teenager dream right now. Like, it's fun, but it's fun. But yeah, so I highly recommend it if you don't mind having a big basketball thing in your driveway. It's fun.
I've heard that's really good for stress relief and just relaxing.
Yeah. It's good. But but self-care is so important. And that's because otherwise, as therapists and humans, we wouldn't be able to navigate any of our private practice if we didn't take care of ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that kind of age-old thinking of if you're on a plane and the air masks they drop, you got to put yours on first before helping someone else. You have to have your cup filled.
Yeah.
Before being able to fill others, because ultimately that's what we do. Another misconception I've heard about therapy is people think we're just here to diagnose and psychoanalyze. Mm. And I don't know about you, but I rarely, if ever, think in that manner.
No.
We're here to help.
Yeah.
Right.
I will usually ask, hey, have you ever been to a doctor or have you ever been officially diagnosed when I meet somebody? But if they don't, and if they don't go to a doctor or they haven't been, I'm not going to be like, all right, we need to get this diagnosis because I need to treat you like what it says for the depressive symptoms or this. But I treat them more like holistic not holistic with Sage and stuff, but like, well, it depends on your whole person.
And although we do need to diagnose for insurance, we have they need a diagnosis, but we don't, it's not something, and it's within the first session, that's a requirement from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
we don't have any, I think most of us don't have a desire.
No. Like it's usually, you know, sometimes it starts as adjustment disorder until you get to know them, unless they have something else. And then you're like, oh, wait, you have the symptoms of anxiety or depression or something else. And that's why I usually do ask if they've seen a doctor, because sometimes people are like, oh, no, I never. Oh, wait, but I was diagnosed with anxiety 2 years ago. I'm like, OK. So then I find out, oh, wait, they do have general anxiety disorder. And then I will talk with them. I'm like, they fit all the symptoms. So they definitely do have that or whatever it might be. But it's not fun having to think in those terms all the time.
Yeah, it's definitely not. And in fact, I think a lot of us, I mean, I'm speaking for myself, and of course you can add to it, but I like to turn that part of my brain off because I don't enjoy using it too much. Like it can be a tool. It's not the end all be all of therapy. And I think I don't know, have you ever been approached by someone or messaged by someone that maybe you haven't heard from in a long time and they're like, hey, you're a therapist. Can you blah, blah, blah? And they talk about a diagnosis or like some policy that has to do with therapy or social work. And those types of things that just with any other professional, you know, we've gone to school, we've gotten a master's, we've had to do an internship, we had to do 2 years post-master's of like basically almost free labor for to be able to get that licensure and go to a lot of schooling. It's not to say that we can't talk shop here and there, but people just coming in and wanting free therapy that are in our lives. That's another
family, thing friends. I will occasionally get rant like, sometimes I love being a therapist, but sometimes like in situations like the kids' school or something like that, I won't tell people what my career is. I'll just.
And why is that?
Because I don't want all of a sudden being the person that people are like, oh, this is happening or this is how I'm feeling or what would you do?
Trying to get free work out of you. Yeah.
A narcissist. It's, I don't know. Maybe they're just annoying. I'm not going to diagnose anyone because I'm just here volunteering as a mom.
Exactly. Like we have different roles in our lives and it's not, we don't necessarily want to turn that part on. Yeah. And that's not to say that we can't add something here and there because we are a therapist, but I've gotten messages randomly. I'm just going to say it on Facebook where people I haven't talked to and I don't know how long that will ask me certain things, not even, oh, hey, I know I never talked to you like ever really. Maybe I passed you in the high school, but you know, this about diagnosis of this or my kid has this.
Oh, wow.
And I understand the need, the desire, the desperation. I get that. I'm not trying to be insensitive to that, but it's a little, I guess, frustrating is the way to put it, because it does happen. And people saying, oh, what's your opinion on this and that? And like policies that you're dreading happening to your field. And you maybe don't want to think about it. I don't want to talk shop all the time.
Or medication. I have had that question from friends on Facebook or stuff like that. I'm like, first of all, I'm not a doctor or I can't give, we're not allowed to give medical advice like that. We could just be like, okay, have you talked to your psychiatrist or your doctor? We did take a pharmacology class and we do know a little bit, but it's not enough.
Right. That is like the very basics. Yeah.
So I did want to ask something too. Since we're talking about like some of the misconceptions and realities of being a therapist. I have heard, and I don't know if you have, about hours. Like sometimes people don't feel or understand like how many hours it takes to graduate as far as the clinical hours and then post-graduation.
Hey guys, this is Tanya just popping in just to let you know that we had so much to talk about during this episode. We actually had to make it into two parts, but we thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. Leave us a review. It really helps us out. And don't forget to follow us. If you want to take a look at our socials, you can follow us at Wicked Psychotherapists on Instagram for more information and any other episode updates. All right, take care, guys.